It's officially 2026, and my New Year's resolution is to prioritize high-quality pieces in my wardrobe. Thanks to Quince, I can already check that off my list. I'm already planning outfits around my new cotton Oxford shirt. It's such a classic, timeless piece that I know I'll be rewearing all year. Need more than just a wardrobe update? Quince has tons of options for the home as well. Maya has had the same dinnerware since college and has finally decided it's time for a refresh, starting with a gorgeous set of ceramic cake plates. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Don't wait. Go to quince.com/rehash for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/rehash to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rehash.
Hey, I'm Maya. I'm a YouTube video maker, but I like to think of myself more as a modern-day philosopher. Bitch.
Hi, I'm Hannah. I'm Maya's co-host, and I took a philosophy class a couple of times.
This is Rehash, a podcast about the social media phenomenons that strike a nerve in our culture, only to be quickly forgotten, but we think are due for a revisiting. This season is on the public theater, which is all about our collective fascination with a good public villain. Today's episode is on
Lindsay Ellis.
For those of you who aren't chronically online like we are, or unfamiliar with my particular niche of YouTube, Lindsay Ellis is a veteran YouTube video essayist. She started making videos for Channel Awesome, which is probably the most famous relic of man yelling at screen film YouTube. At this point, she was operating under the name Nostalgia Chick and would mostly make retrospectives on old films and shows. She left Channel Awesome in 2014 for problems which I honestly can't get into here for the sake of time, but let's just say it was bad. She then started her own channel under her actual name and pivoted to longer form videos, which took on a more analytical lens. She focuses a lot on the Disney canon and also did a prolific series on the Transformers franchise. So Lindsay is no stranger to controversy and criticism. She has been the subject of many harassment campaigns by right-wing and MRA groups who disagree with her leftist views, but she's always managed to recover from it. Then, in March 2021, she posted this take on her Twitter. Also watched Raya and the Last Dragon, and I think we need to come up with a name for this genre that is basically Avatar The Last Airbender Reduxes. It's like half of all YA fantasy published in the last few years. Almost immediately after the tweet was posted, people, some Asian and many not, took issue with what they perceived as Ellis drawing similarities between two loosely connected media inspired by Asian culture, and thus insinuating that all Asian media is more or less the same. Ellis then clapped back at these responses with, "I can see where if you squint, I was implying all Asian-inspired properties are the same, especially if you were already privy to these conversations where I had not seen them. But the basic framework of TLA is becoming popular in fantasy fiction outside of Asian-inspired stuff." She then received backlash for her use of the word squint in an argument about anti-Asian racism. The next morning, seeing the backlash grow, she clarified, "Raya, more than anything, reminded me of a few YA fantasies from the last few years, which are not only based in Asian folklore, but the authors were openly inspired by The Last Airbender." But the backlash had already begun snowballing. As old tweets and comments she made throughout her decade-long career began popping up on Twitter, Ellis deleted her account. That is when the issue really began. In removing herself from the site, people concluded that Ellis had, in fact, responded overdramatically over some harmless, good-faith criticism about a tone-deaf take. This tweet I'm about to read pretty much sums up where people were at. "Lindsay Ellis saying she got canceled when she was the one who deleted her Twitter because she didn't want to accept that she did a racist? White women victimhood unparalleled." As people marveled at Ellis's departure from the platform, the old tweets and comments began to spread. Everything ranging from out-of-context jokes to racially insensitive takes made their way to Twitter. Thousands of people joined together in celebrating the exit of this video essayist, who they had believed had had it coming for years. And many laughed at how none of this would have happened to her if she had, quote, just apologized. The response was so intense that Ellis's name began trending on Twitter worldwide. So then in April of that year, Ellis posted a video on her channel called Mask Off, where she analyzes the nature of Twitter as a platform and chronicles in extreme detail every indiscretion she has ever made on the internet. She also noted that the criticism was not only coming from good faith actors. In fact, she received a ton of death threats as well from people who had been trying to dox and deplatform her for years. While her subscribers on YouTube were pretty sympathetic, the video was mostly lampooned on Twitter from people who made fun of how long it was and equated it to other YouTuber crocodile tear apology videos. One person tweeted, "It's disappointing that criticism by Asians in regards to Lindsay Ellis's tweet comparing Raya to Avatar The Last Airbender have been subsumed by the overwhelming idea of cancel culture and what it means to be a white person. She centered herself in what was criticism about Asian microaggression." Her name was trending again. Ellis released a couple more videos in the following months, but in December 2021, she made a formal statement on her Patreon declaring her official departure from YouTube. And that was very sad.
I know.
Yeah, this story took like a pretty big toll on me, I think, or this entire thing.
Well, her Mask Off video also came out like right around the time that you were working on your Fame video, which was about the abuse of fame. And so, yeah, it was kind of scary timing.
Yeah, it was really strangely serendipitous in the worst way. Well, we can get into this. I just kind of want to start, Hannah, with what you know about Lindsay Ellis before I kind of go into my own spiel. What did you know about her before today? And what's your overall kind of impression of her work?
So I knew who Lindsay Ellis was because my dear friend Sebastian loved all of the Channel Awesome videos when they were at their peak, and would sometimes make me watch them with him when I came over. Especially he would try to get me to watch Lindsay because he was like, "You're a girl who likes feminism, watch this." And I watched some of them, but again, like, I really just wasn't watching that kind of YouTube content. So while I understand the influence and prominence of Lindsay Ellis, it was something I missed out on, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes the situation kind of even crazier. Like, she had said this in her video, that she's like a niche YouTuber who became like a worldwide name because of this one tweet. But to hone it in, this is a very niche section of the internet. The internet is niche.
Niche, but if you talk to anybody who likes video essays and stuff, like, she's...
But that is a niche. Like, video essays are a
niche. It is a niche, but I would say, like, in her world of Twitter is one of the biggest... Or not Twitter, YouTube is one of the biggest
I think names. She, like, at that time, was the biggest.
Yeah.
I started my YouTube channel because of Lindsay Ellis. She was one of the first people that I started watching on YouTube as more of an adult, and I fell in love with her videos. Genuinely say I've seen every single one of them. Wow. Even her old nostalgia chick ones. She had this like canon series where she'd go through the canon of one particular idea, like the canon of Santa Claus and how that's kind of played out in media over the years. And yeah, I really adored her. I just think she has this really like, I don't know what the right word is, this very like sardonic tone in her videos that is really funny, and she's kind of established this really casual nature to very academic work, something that I'm still trying to work on myself. But yeah, I can genuinely, and I've said this pretty often, like, I am very inspired by her, and I owe a lot, I think, to what she had done on YouTube and what she had done in making it more serious, because what she did with Channel Awesome was kind of silly stuff, and being able to reclaim that, because they are hands down a very misogynistic franchise. Being able to take that, reclaim it, and start making kind of like feminist, like leftist content when that wasn't really on the internet was really brave, in my opinion. And I basically watched this happen on Twitter in real time. I think I was showing it to you a lot when it was happening.
Yes, I think so. Yes.
Yeah. And it was actually kind of insane watching it unfold, because I saw her original tweet. I left Twitter for a bit, went back on like the next day, and then saw that her name was trending, probably in the same way she had. But it was like a lot of people I follow, honestly, kind of jumping in to say what they felt about her indiscretion. And it was a lot because I didn't agree. I expressed it in a tweet myself, but then deleted it soon after because I didn't want people who followed me to like think that I was a bad person. So, but I kind of regret it because I actually wish I had stood up a bit more with my own platform.
I know it's hard though, because like you're seeing the damage of negative attention on another person. And so to include yourself in defending them, you are basically asking for that same attention.
Yeah.
You know that that's what's going to happen. And so, yeah, I mean, I can understand wanting to avoid that.
Yeah, and avoiding negative attention. It's such a rough thing, though, because I think when this happens to someone, they get so isolated so easily.
Totally.
Because all of their friends, yeah, like, everyone has a stake in this. All of their colleagues all have platforms as well. And so, I mean, I'm not her colleague. We did not follow each other on Twitter, but I am adjacent.
I mean, but I would say because you guys didn't actually have, like, a personal relationship, I don't think that there's an onus put on you to step in and stand up for her. I think if, you know, if it were to happen to somebody that you did have that kind of a relationship with, then yeah, like, I think the expectations would be different.
But and people were coming for people who were her friends. I know Cat Black is this YouTuber who people started coming for, basically being like, why aren't you speaking out against your racist friend? And all these other people basically who are associated with her, which forces them to kind of have to differentiate themselves. I don't think anyone actually did kind of like abandon her in that moment. But yeah, the stuff I was seeing was pretty bonkers. It was a lot of just really hateful stuff, like people being like, that bitch has had it coming for years, just all this kind of stuff. It just felt really malicious and gleeful. So yeah, I guess I just wanted to ask, what do you think of how that situation escalated? Why do you think people read the tweet in that way?
I really don't want to speak on behalf of
but we can definitely differentiate that the majority of people were white. With the initial,
so backlash.
This isn't just a homogenous Southeast Asian group of people that were initially angry about the tweet.
Okay, so I'm not really familiar that well with The Last Airbender, and the only reason I know about this other film is through this controversy. I don't know the validity of her claims. I can't really speak on that. I don't know. It seems like something that in another timeline someone would have been like, hey, I don't know if you realize this, but you're sort of like painting all children's media that, you know, is inspired by Southeast Asian culture with the same brush. And maybe she would have gone, oh, I didn't mean it like that. And we all would have moved on.
Mm-hmm.
If that was something that upset people, right? Mm-hmm. I can't tell them whether or not they should be upset, but it didn't really need to become this big situation that it did become.
Okay. Hey, I am editing. And just wanted to pop in here to add that this happened really soon after the massage parlor shooting in Atlanta, where 6 of the 7 victims were Asian women. So the topic of anti-Asian racism was very much at the forefront of people's minds when Lindsay posted her tweet, which may have kind of added a bit of extra heat to the backlash. I think this could have a favorable reading. You could take away from it that she was making a point about how a lot of Asian-inspired Western media, which fuses together basically every Asian culture into one, tends to rely on the same tropes. So both of these media, Avatar The Last Airbender and Raya, are Western products, right?
Okay.
Avatar is a Nickelodeon product created by white people. Raya is a Disney product created by white people with a few non-white people here and there. But it is, at the end of the day, making a profit for a white conglomerate. And if you were to look at the skeleton of Raya's premise, it has a bunch of distinct nations which are existing in an inharmonious, tumultuous state of like kind of war. The main character is also on a quest for a lost magical being which can restore harmony to the kingdoms. This is basically the skeleton of Avatar. Right. Even their names are similar. Avatar The Last Airbender, Raya and the Last Dragon. I also do think that because these are Western properties, which are fusion properties, like neither of these is about any distinct Asian culture.
Knowing that both of them are coming from primarily white creators from the Western world, yeah, that does kind of shed some light on it.
What she had said in her video was that a lot of the people who initially clapped back at her had not even seen Raya, which is really interesting to me that I like what I had said in this video that I had posted this month about cancelings and just like how retributive our culture can be. A lot of what we do is we can kind of project outrage onto the internet without actually feeling outraged. And I think this is kind of one of those instances, like people kind of almost wanted to be like, Lindsay's wrong, instead of just kind of sitting down and being like, actually, maybe there is validity to the fact that Raya and Avatar, there are deep issues with those properties to begin with, you know?
I also think that there's this weird sort of hostility on the internet towards, like, film criticism. For example, anyone who speaks out and says, I think that the Marvel Cinematic Universe is ruining cinema, or are just critical of that property, somehow people are looking for ways to be mad about something more than just the fact that this person didn't like something that they liked.
Yeah, exactly.
Where it's like, you can just be upset that this person has a different opinion from you without extracting context that isn't there. Where, mm-hmm. I don't know, she's a film critic and she's doing what she does, which is pointing out something to criticize in the project.
I do think a lot of that, kind of what you're getting at, and a lot of what the response was, this like knee-jerk, upset response to Lindsay's tweet, is this kind of facet of confirmation bias.
Mm-hmm.
For the listeners, it's basically this form of cognitive bias. It was coined by the psychologist Peter Wasson, where humans are kind of inclined to read information to confirm their own pre-existing beliefs rather than taking the information at face value.
Mm-hmm.
It's this thing we do where often unconsciously we'll select certain aspects of the information that favor our own values and exclude the rest. It's a pretty normal thing to do, like everyone does it, but in situations like this it can actually be kind of severe. You know, yeah, when I read her tweet, I was like, yeah, Raya and Avatar, I can see where you're coming from. But someone who doesn't like Lindsay and is immediately coming in already irritated by maybe something she had said in the past, they kind of applied to this tweet and took out just the select things, oh, Raya and Avatar are the same, which then you could obviously exclude, you know, kind of extract the concept that that tweet is racist. And I think, you know, Lindsay, who's been on the internet for over a decade, has ruffled a lot of feathers over the years.
Creators say things that get them in trouble or are interpreted in a way that they didn't mean or cause controversy, but oftentimes they bounce back from that, or, you know, they move on. The people that are still their fans are still their fans. Maybe they've lost a bit of a following, but that wasn't the case here. Why was that such a nail in the coffin?
That's something I'm still kind of trying to figure out today, and it's something that scared me honestly so deeply about this situation, because I actually don't know. Like, I don't know. Even she says in her video at one point, because she starts reading out all these like really malicious tweets that were being thrown out there, and she was like, what have I done to you? Like, why do you hate me so much? It's like the internet is a place that you can just unsubscribe from someone if you don't like them. There's so many people I don't like out there and creators I don't agree with. But I do think a lot of it came down to the fact that Lindsay is someone who wants to do good and is well-intentioned and apologizes. And I think in this situation, because she didn't, people expected her to come back and apologize for this thing that she had done. And she was like, no, I'm not going to. I'm just going to clarify that what I said wasn't about that. That people were like, okay, no, this bitch has to go. And I do think it's also kind of specific because it happened on Twitter. All of this happened exclusively on Twitter. And I was actually going to come back at you with a question.
Oh,
do you think what happened here is specific to Twitter as a platform? Like, I personally noticed that a lot of these specific snowball situations tend to happen there. And I'm wondering kind of what it is about Twitter that makes it so hospitable for that. Because I think that is what made this so severe.
I think TikTok operates in like almost the same way. The next video I will be presenting, we will divulge into that.
Well, interesting, because the next thing I'm presenting, we will also dive into
that. Because with Twitter and with TikTok, you have the ability to, on Twitter, you quote tweet and that makes a big difference. Or you can screenshot and like tweet with the picture, and on TikTok you can duet and you can stitch things, and so you're immediately able to not just show your response to something, but through associating it with the original tweet or video in question, have people be able to find it. And so I think it makes it easier to snowball, because yeah, you have that immediate access to it. You can't just make a separate post responding. Or exactly. It's not just in the comments, which can be deleted.
Exactly. Yeah, you end up losing control. I mean, at the moment, I've protected my Twitter, because I've had a couple times where a tweet will go viral. And sometimes it'll be like a good viral moment. But it's like, no, I just don't want that. I don't want that. Sometimes I just want to tweet to my followers who are on Twitter, because I like can trust that they have an interest in who I am and they have context as to who I am. Whereas people who are quote tweeting you and then seeing your quote tweet, like the random public can't. And yeah, you have no control of it over it once it's out there in the ether.
Yeah.
I also think Twitter stands out from other social media platforms because I'm actually in a future episode going to kind of distinguish them, it from TikTok a bit because it's really it's a text heavy discourse driven site. These posts on it have character limits, meaning that you, if you want to make a point, you have to drive it home as succinctly as possible, but also as reductively as possible. The platform also has an algorithm which functions with like a personalization AI similar to all the other ones. So the tweets you're seeing are similar to the ones you've already liked. And this combination makes it so that like the buzziest, most sensational tweets get bumped up and then circled around by people who are already likely to agree with them. So if one person who doesn't like Lindsay Ellis is tweeting, hey, Lindsay Ellis is a racist who refuses to apologize, and you're like a random person who feels neutral on that subject, on the subject of Lindsay Ellis, you're likely to click on it and then, you know, to kind of see what the issue is. And like I said in my canceling video, people also enjoy positive feedback for their comments, right? On Twitter, you can like comments, you can ratio someone. So tweets agreeing with the post are likely to get bumped up under it. And a neutral person has clicked on this, so they're starting to see more and more tweets echoing the same idea. And if you read enough of them, you start to be like, yeah, Lindsay Ellis should be deplatformed. She's terrible, especially because she deleted her Twitter. So there was no ability for her to further defend or clarify herself in like a direct way.
Yeah, I also think because Twitter is, like you said, a text-based medium, you can't really read for tone on Twitter. You can't tell when someone's just like being sarcastic or sardonic or serious or whatever. You just, you read it however you're going to read it.
Oh, that's such a good point. Yeah.
And I do think that that makes it a lot easier in regards to confirmation bias to read it the way you think that they mean it or you want them to mean it.
And I totally empathize. Like, I totally understand why people, you know, on first glance, if someone who is Southeast Asian saw that and was like, that's not chill, and then responded being like, hey, I just don't really like that you lumped those two things together. Obviously, that's understandable. But just judging from, I was looking at the people who were responding, and a lot of them were just white people. And I was like, why are you being so loud? Why are you being so loud?
Because that's what social media is.
Also, what really bothered me about it was people speaking on behalf, like white people speaking on behalf of Southeast Asian people, like they're a monolith. I find this, it's this thing with leftist culture where, she kind of talks about this in her video a bit, but it's something that I've kind of been irritated with too. It's just treating all BIPOC like they all have the same political opinions as each other, or even cultural opinions. And it's a very infantilizing, insulting way to treat, like, obviously a very diverse group of people. Yeah. And so, like, white people speaking on behalf of Southeast Asian people in this instance, like, there were actually a lot of tweets from Southeast Asian people that were being like, I don't really get why you guys are so upset about this. But of course they got pushed down because they're not as sensational as other tweets.
Here's the other thing about online backlash to anything is that you assume that the most seen or the most vocal opinions are actually the majority opinion, where likely there were a lot of people like you who thought that this was being blown out of proportion but weren't saying anything, right? Because either they were trying to avoid not getting involved, or it's just not in their nature to tweet about that. I think that the people who are looking to make this a thing are obviously going to represent the majority of comments. And so it's really hard to do, you know, a actual survey of who is mad, how large of, you know, the public or her followers does this group represent.
I think you can always, 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 and this is something you've taught me when I'm like most scared about my YouTube comments, is that it's a vocal minority, right? Yeah. Almost always, even if you see people who are getting the most viral tweets on Twitter, it's still a vocal minority because the most of the population isn't on Twitter.
No, and most of the population doesn't know who Lindsay Ellis is.
Yeah, and if you looked under her YouTube video, on the mask off video, people were like, yeah, I'm really sorry this happened to you. A lot of other YouTubers were coming out and being like, I don't really get it. Like, it was a vocal minority on Twitter, but it's specific to Twitter. She also, in her mask off video, talks about how there's this really strong presence of trolls and grifters on Twitter who pose as outraged left-wing people, which is this really dystopian concept, but they'll pose as left-wing people from burner accounts. They'll pose as people of color to amplify the overall outrage. So there were a lot of bad faith actors in there as well who wanted nothing other than to see her get deplatformed and like obliterated, basically. And it's hard to distinguish who's who on a site where almost everyone is anonymous.
Yeah.
But she was in her video going through these different accounts of people who were like pretending to be people of color, or like all these like anime profile picture people with like zero followers, just like throwing their voices out there and saying the most like ridiculous stuff. But they were getting a lot of likes because it's obviously they were feeding into this already outraged Twitter population.
And then I think it also becomes like almost an internal echo chamber where if you start to feel maybe the things that they're saying about you are true, or, you know, in your deepest insecurities, that's you are this terrible person. And then it doesn't really matter who is saying it, just that people are saying it and you're seeing it said back at you without actually taking into consideration, yeah, one, is this a real person? Two, is this a person that if I met them in daily life, I would actually care if they liked me or agreed with me? Those are things that make backlash online so difficult because of the anonymity. You're not able to really assess the fact that in real life, most people aren't always going to agree with you, but you know when you care and when you don't.
Yeah, exactly.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it like it distorts perspective.
It becomes a matter of volume or quantity over quality, I guess.
Yeah.
Ultimately, if you can tell that something is coming out of bad faith, or you've, you know, examined what you've said and you're like, no, I genuinely don't see something that is wrong with it. I don't know. I think it's just you kind of have to let that person go.
I know, it's something that I've been kind of even like thinking about a lot now that I've officially started therapy in my life. But like, it is actually so hard for people to let things go.
Yeah.
And it's something that I'm really trying to deal with myself. Like, it's not a natural human instinct.
No.
To let something go. And I think that is something, especially like with my job, I have a lot of issues reading comments and being like, ah, it just really bothers me because I feel like you're not understanding me. You're not understanding my video. My current video, for example, right now, it's a little provocative with the ideas. And I think it's really frustrating because in the comment section, people have kind of misinterpreted the point of the video, or they'll often misquote you in the comments. Mm. And it's like my instinct is to be like, oh, no, and just want to defend myself. But it actually makes it so much worse.
Mm-hmm.
In these situations, defending yourself isn't an option. Because, like you said with the nail in the coffin earlier, that actually escalates the issue and turns you into a greater villain. So I just kind of wanted to go back to that, because a lot of what Lindsay focuses on in the mask off video is that concept of just apologize. That's what everyone was saying. If she had just apologized, none of this would have happened to her. Do you think that that's the case? Do you think if she had just apologized, none of this would have happened to her? Maybe this wouldn't have been the nail in her coffin?
It's interesting. I do think that in order to be a public figure nowadays, you really do have to know how to craft a perfectly worded apology, whether or not that apology is coming from a sincere place,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, who knows what celebrities are saying to the people in their lives about what they're having to apologize for. We talk and joke about the Notes app apology, and it's gotten to the point where people are going to judge like the quality of your apology before they like accept it. It's just become this whole song and dance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is like a really ritualistic thing.
Yeah, and like sometimes the apologies are really valid. They're for things that someone should apologize for. Warranted. But then sometimes,
like for example, the Ellie Kemper situation with the KKK ball.
Yeah, she was in this weird beauty pageant when she was 19 with her family's country club, and it had the ties to like the KKK or something,
and she had been like, I can't make any excuses for this. And that's a situation where you're like, yeah you probably can't make any excuses for that, and it's good you're saying, you're just flat out being like, I'm sorry for what happened.
But people like, oftentimes when someone gives like, I don't know, a good apology, people are like, see, this is how you apologize.
Yeah, exactly. But then there are certain moments with this Lindsay Ellis situation where it's, I think the person who is the subject of this should at least be allowed to be like, No, that's not what I meant. Or at least be allowed to be like, I don't really think what you're, this abuse you're hurling at me. And I will be clear that I think what people were saying to her and about her was very abusive. Obviously, there were some nice tweets here and there or polite ones, but a lot of what people were saying was really awful. I was watching in real time this concept of just apologize. Like, you just need to say sorry. None of this stuff would have happened to you. We wouldn't have gone full throttle. It's kind of alleging that you aren't allowed to defend yourself if you're a public figure. And if you do, you're only inviting like a wave of extreme hate. It's open season on you from then on out. If you ever try to clarify what you were saying.
Well, it's like the idea that if you've like a sentence for some really serious crime. If you want parole, you basically have to be willing to show remorse and acknowledge what you did. But then people who proclaim their innocence are kind of stuck in this perpetual cycle because they cannot get paroled, even if they swear they're innocent.
Or they have to lie and be like, yes, I did it.
Yes, and I'm so remorseful for this thing.
Please give me my life.
It's also like, you know, we are both coming at this from different perspectives. You have a public profile online. You make content to be consumed by the public. I'm a nobody. And so...
That's not true.
She's somebody to me. She's very beautiful to me.
And that's all that matters. Outside of you, like, this is the idea of, like, you know, the cancel culture reaction, whatever, is something that is very outside of my actual life, and I think most lay people's lives, and that we're like, okay, that's something that public figures experience, but it's not actually like a systemic problem. But also we're coming at it from different perspectives because for you it is like a very real,
it's just taken, yeah, kind of stepping into someone's shoes. Obviously I'm not saying that everyone who's ever been deplatformed or gotten criticism doesn't deserve it. Like, obviously I think there are many scenarios in which someone of like in a powerful position absolutely needs to be held accountable, but it has taken kind of stepping into someone's shoes, someone who has a platform, and I'm by no means even close to the vein that Lindsay Ellis was at when this happened to her. But to really, really, really empathize with the concept that you're no longer a human being the second people decide that you're not redeemable. It's a very dehumanizing experience. I've had a brush with it in very micro ways, which we'll talk about in this season. But it's psychologically very, very difficult to bounce back from.
I can imagine.
Once people see me as not being able to be redeemed for something like this, like something that I don't even think is that horrible, is so scary. Like, this situation honestly really took a toll on me, which is funny because it's like a YouTuber who I don't even know, but it was like, it really actually affected me a lot.
Can I ask you a question?
Ooh.
So, you know, going into our theme of public theater and all of that, if you found yourself in Lindsay's position over, you know, making a comment over something that to you was like pretty benign, and people were kind of saying like, just apologize or get out of here, what would you do? Do you know?
It's kind of hard because I have gotten criticism in the past and I've been very open to apologizing, and I do think there are situations where I should clarify. Like, I use the pinned comment on my YouTube as a way for me to clarify things that I didn't mean in the videos. With this, it's hard because I think Lindsay was at the end of her rope in terms of people criticizing her, that she responded. She kind of clapped back fast. I think what I learned from this is that I don't think I would respond at all, and I think I would delete my Twitter.
Really?
Like, but I think the second you just get out of there and you ride out the storm is the best way to do it because people will forget.
Yeah, probably.
But like, I think responding is almost always a bad idea. It actually is going to make things worse, which is sad because I think people should be able to be clarified, even for the people who are upset about it. Like, they deserve clarification, right?
You have to operate with the understanding that the people who are going to be in your mentions and like quote tweets and stuff are looking probably for the attention that comes.
Yeah, with being involved. Want to be involved with you and be able to be like, I had this spat with this, you know.
Sorry to put you on the spot like that.
No.
But I'm just curious. I mean, like, how do you navigate that level of, like, even if you don't think that it's something you should apologize for, doing the song and dance of it anyways because it would save you the hassle or worse?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm between trying to save my own mental health and between trying to stick by...
Like, your dignity?
My value. Oh. No, not dignity, but my values, and be like, no, I'm not apologizing for that. I'm not going to let you guys victimize me like this, which actually kind of comes into this thing I wanted to talk about, because people kept calling her responses a form of white woman victimhood. I, you know, read that in one of the tweets earlier, and I kind of wanted to think about that because the term white women victimhood originated as a term used by BIPOC, particularly Black people, to identify those instances where a white person uses tears to recenter a racist situation around themselves. So to turn themselves into the victim to eschew any kind of real discussion of guilt.
Yeah.
And white women have historically been viewed as damsels worthy of saving, in opposition to the alleged like predation of men of color.
Yeah.
Because this is our society, and at the expense of BIPOC women who are not viewed as being worthy of saving or sympathy. So you can think about this. I mean, we're going to go here, but you can think about this in the Emmett Till situation.
I was just thinking about that, yeah.
Yeah, with this is like, that is probably the most absolute extreme example of this, but you know, in the Emmett Till situation, a white woman in the South basically lied about being raped by this 14-year-old black boy in Mississippi, and he paid the ultimate price for it in the most devastating way.
It's indisputable that like white womanhood has been weaponized in a really disturbing, fucked up way, and
totally,
even in situations where maybe the end result is not as extreme as that, things that are still being carried out in the spirit of it that allow white women to be lifted up by the patriarchy, by by the white patriarchy, basically playing into their roles as like being like weak and needing with protection or whatever, exactly, and then further oppressing other groups.
Yeah, like to use a less extreme instance than the Emmett Till one, but like you can think about Amy Cooper, that woman who was in Central Park, I think it was a couple of years ago, who claimed to cops that a black man who had asked her to put her dog on a leash, he was a bird watcher, mm-hmm, asked her to put her dog on a leash, was threatening her life. You know, often these tears are like kind of a calculated weapon to dehumanize, dismiss, and villainize BIPOC. Yeah. A lot of black women have come out and been like, it's so hard to talk to white women about their microaggressions, about the way that they treat me in the office or treat me in the, and like, because they'll just immediately be like, no, it's not my fault.
It's this kind of fucked up tactic.
But, you know, it made me think a lot when people were saying this about Lindsay Ellis, kind of applying it to the situation. When you apply it to Twitter and one person against everyone, I don't know if it can be applied that way. I don't think that, like, she kind of was turned into a victim because of the sheer magnitude of her opponents. Like,
right,
the sheer magnitude of it. And then when the criticism is turned into this kind of mass harassment campaign from, like, all sides of the political spectrum, her feelings, you know, about the situation being dismissed as just white woman tears kind of ignores the abuse that was being thrown her way. I think a lot of people were dismissing and kind of like honestly gaslighting her about the fact that, and I hate using that word, but I do think it applies to the situation, being like, it's good faith criticism, sweetie. You should just be listening to the good faith criticism. And it's like, but that none of it's good faith criticism at this point. Like, that's been drowned out completely.
I think, again, every word or term that wants a really useful and distinct meaning has been sort of overused so much in online discourse that it actually means nothing and could be applied to anything.
And it takes the power away from the original. Well,
exactly.
Word. There's this little phrase that's been popularized a bit on Twitter called getting womaned. Have you heard of it? Can you tell the people a bit about what this is and where it came from?
So womaned is a term that came from Rain Fisher Kwan. She's so freaking smart and like only,
she's like a baby 20, genius.
21 and it makes me feel so bad about myself because she's really smart. But being womaned is basically like anytime a woman hits a certain like
threshold.
I don't know, yeah, in her fame or attention, suddenly everybody is just ready to go, she annoys me, I never liked her, blah blah blah,
you're done, basically.
Yeah, I mean, one that she pointed out recently was Olivia Rodrigo. We were like, oh wow, she's this like child prodigy, young musical genius, and now all I see is videos being like, she actually can't sing that well, like look at her sing off key with Alanis Morissette.
Yeah, it's this really childish response just to be like, this is too popular, so actually it's bad and it was always bad.
Can we just be happy for this person?
Rain Fisher Kwan, yeah, she kind of came up with this term, woman. Rain Fisher Kwan's a political commentator, activist, writer, to describe the phenomenon, yeah, where a woman has been overexposed in the public eye for so long that everyone stops liking her all at the same time. And she used it recently to describe a cultural turn against acclaimed writer Otessa Moshfegh. I have a video pretty adjacent to this idea, which also talks about how this very thing has happened to Greta Gerwig and Sally Rooney. Like, all these women in media who got lifted up, everyone was like, you're so smart. Then they hit the threshold and everyone was like, nope, we gotta take her down a peg. We gotta knock her right down.
It's like, you get to be the star woman, the woman of the hour, the one woman we all like.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like, yeah, you got one woman at a time to like. So what happened during the Lindsay Ellis backlash was that attacks on her began to evolve into premeditated, preemptive attacks on other female YouTubers like Sarah Zedd and Jenny Nicholson, who were similarly as big as Lindsay, neither of whom had done anything in that moment to warrant this response. So going back to the whole idea of like confirmation bias, it seems that there are people who just decided they didn't like Sarah and Jenny and were just kind of waiting in the sidelines for their inevitable demise. But it's not like male YouTuber names were coming up here nearly as much, if not honestly ever. Like, I did not see any of the male leftists, bread tubers basically, come up in this discussion. So it's like these people were unconsciously aware of this concept of getting womaned, like that their downfalls would be inevitable at some point of or another simply because they were women in a public sphere. Sorry, mm-hmm. The people kind of hovering in the sidelines.
Well, the thing is, though, is that in some cases, what it does is it mumbles up bad faith, backlash, or criticism with actually good faith criticism of a person coming from two different parties, but then they get mashed together in, like, the online sphere. I mean, Amy Schumer is a good example where, like, there are, like, good faith criticisms about
her, like, racist jokes and her plagiarism.
Yeah, like, that is makes sense.
Which, let me be honest with you, what fucking male comedian that's big has not ripped off a joke? So many of them. Yeah. Look into it.
But...
not that I'm saying it's okay.
It's, like, it's hard because she's someone that I would love to defend against the misogyny that is just mad that she is a woman comedian, which, that is a sin to some people, and I don't know, isn't like hot enough for some people, which again, a sin. But I also completely agree with the criticisms of her and her racist jokes, and so it's hard. You want to be able to have like an actual constructive conversation about somebody's bad history, but then you are also having to constantly shoo off men that were like, oh yeah, and she's not even that fucking funny. Like,
she's
fat.
Oh, she's
you joke
ugly.
About sex? Oh, so good, funny, yeah.
The disproportionate response compared to like male comedians for her doing basically all the exact same things they do. And I'm not trying to say women should be able to be just as racist and just as plagiarizing as men. When it's so disproportionate, you're kind of like, no, there's definitely misogyny involved. And I just think the internet can't deal with the concept that two truths can exist at once. I don't even think this applies to the Lindsay Ellis situation because I don't think her tweet...
Right.
Like, I just think people read it in the worst possible way, and I don't think that's what she meant. Honestly, at this point, like, I'm waiting to get womaned. I don't think that I'm, like, so famous that I'm going to get womaned now. When you get a viral video, your channel grows, and it's only ever growing. Like, really, it's not a thing where your channel gets less and less subscribers. Like, you are just kind of, like, incrementally growing different paces.
Yeah.
But I do think I'm at this, like, really nice point where people seem to like me and tolerate me, and I can maybe be a bit, like, annoyingly edgelord on Twitter about things, but, like, at a certain point, like, I actually really don't think I'm going to be able to get away with being myself, honestly. You know, I have a lot of videos on controversial topics, and many people disagree with my opinions, and I think easily, in a lot of these instances, people could, in the case of Lindsay, too, like, people can collect little snippets and sound bites of every single thing I've ever said that could be construed as horrible and use it as a reason to be like, this woman shouldn't be around anymore. And what Lindsay's situation taught me was that you aren't really allowed to grow. People don't want you to grow. And that scared me, like, honestly, more than I can say. It was a pretty big learning experience.
This is why my Twitter of 100 followers is private, because I was like, too much.
Yeah, it's just too much. And, you know, she since talked about the emotional and mental harm that the incident kind of did to her and how difficult it's been for her to recover from it, even with extensive therapy, like she was saying in an interview on the Financial Diet, that her therapist didn't really get it. Because you can't get it until you're in that person's shoes. And I think that's, you know, a lot of what this lack of empathy on Twitter is coming from, is like, you just have no idea what it's like to be criticized by so many people at the same time for something that, like, you can't even be like, yeah, maybe what I did was bad. Like, I don't think Lindsay could sit there and be like, yeah, what I did was awful and that was all warranted. Mm-hmm. No, and she's honestly expressed a lot of anger about this. So she kind of summed up her feelings about the situation like this. She said, so much of our lives are built around social media. Whenever I posted that post, people talked about me like I was dead. It was revelatory in the worst way. And I think that that's really fucking sad.
That is sad.
People go on living after this happens to them. People who are the subjects of disproportionate response to whatever their sins may have been. And I just think that we really need to do some self-reflection as a culture about why we are doing this to people. I don't think it's actually for altruistic reasons.
I agree. I think it is a hellscape out there. Looks like Twitter might be on the down low, or the down
Elon
down, whatever, which might be for the best.
Yeah, like we hate Elon, but Twitter honestly also, could probably go.
I like personally cannot really keep up a conversation with more than two people at once, so the idea of having to have a conversation with like hundreds or thousands of people and then make sure that I'm being like understood properly, no thank you.
No
that
thank you
sounds exhausting. I would need to take many naps.
Maybe what we've learned from this is everyone should just take more naps. Get off Twitter and take a nap.
Rehash is hosted by Hannah Rain and me, Maia. It's produced and edited by me, and the intro and outro song is produced by our talented friend, Ian Mills. Thanks for listening.